Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome to Ridiculous History. It's weird, I'm not Ben Bolin. I'm Noel Brown. Ben usually says a pithy thing at the top of the show, but I'm just not that clever. But I'll tell you what I have here is someone who is that clever. And his name is Christopher Hasiotis, who you know and love. And we always say we have a Christopher-shaped hole in the studio at the end of each episode. And now that hole is filled.
Does that mean I'm supposed to say something pithy and clever now?
You just did. Just man. Your presence alone is all the pithiness and cleverness anyone here needs. But give it some time. It'll just come naturally. It'll just come flowing forth from you.
I think I should. What do I say? I say you're Noel, I'm Ben, and
that's a different show.
Already
different show,
man.
You're talking about you are you. This is a different show.
Who are we?
We are Ridiculous History.
Oh, great!
Didn't I already say that?
I'm in the right place.
I'm glad that you're here because Ben is, as he would say, on adventures abroad,
kicked into and out of whatever.
And I don't know. I don't want to spill the tea, as the kids say, about what Ben's up to too much. I will say he is in Japan. But he's got some pretty cool stories to tell when he gets back, so I don't want to scoop him on any of that.
I think you just spilled the tea.
No, I spilled the tea about his location, so you guys can use theater of the mind to invent some scenarios as to what Ben may or may not be up to. And that was my segue into today's episode, which is a lot about creating scenarios that may or may not have actually happened and theater of the mind.
So that's sort of like, well, let me ask you this.
Sure.
You like fights, right? You like battles and statistics?
Yeah, I like battles.
Arguments?
I like debates.
Battles of the wits.
I do, yeah.
Noel, you did this when you were a kid, right? You're a comic book fan, right?
Yeah, I kind of came to that later in life, but I think okay. I see where you're going with
right.
this.
Right, so, you know, one sort of schoolyard thing a lot of people dive into is who would win in a fight?
Right.
Spider-Man versus Superman.
Yeah.
The Invisible Woman versus Galactus.
Invisible Man.
Not a superhero.
No, you
well,
sure?
It depends. I mean, are we talking League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, Fantastic Four?
Exactly.
Yeah.
In League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, they superhero-ify the Invisible Man, don't they?
It is sort of a fantasy mashup of powerful people.
I would argue that Invisible Man versus Invisible Woman, very dull fight.
Well, unless you're the Predator.
That's right.
Unless you're the Predator, and then it's just like watching two hot bodies.
Exactly. Hot bodies. Where are you going with this, Christopher? Where are you going with this? What do we got going on today?
So I wanted to talk to you about another fantasy fight.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing, you know, I mean, fantasy fighting is people probably went all the way back and were like, I bet Galahad could beat Guinevere in a battle. I bet
Galahad versus Guinevere?
Indeed. Who knows? We don't have historical records that go back that far. At least I don't have any here in this drawer. But we do have a really strange instance in recent history of a fantasy battle that was the sort of thing that people would argue about in barbershops, in bars, over a sandwich, over a beer. Muhammad Ali versus Rocky Marciano.
Exactly. Who would reign supreme?
Right. And
this is a fight that never took place.
It did not take place because these two men, these two boxing champions, were not the same age. They were not of the same era. It wouldn't be like arguing who would put on a better show, the Beatles or the Stones. It would be like saying who would put on a better show, the Beatles or Matchbox 20?
Yeah, or Mozart.
And we know the answer to that.
Obviously, Matchbox 20. The Beatles were a notoriously not very good live band.
Matchbox 20 wasn't a very good anything.
You're
band.
Crazy. What are you talking? It's 3 a.m. I must be lonely.
Have I brought enough tangents for this? Have we met the tangent quota yet?
Oh, no. That we have not yet to begin to scratch the surface of tangents that we will scratch in this episode. But let's talk about some superlatives, shall we?
Absolutely.
The fight of the century, the thriller in Manila, the rumble in the jungle, all of these names for Muhammad Ali. These big fights, the big guys. Have you heard of the super fight?
Like Superman?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly like
Superman. No. You know,
Muhammad Ali fought Superman.
In a comic book?
In a comic book.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. But no, the super fight
Tell me
is
about it.
A fictional fight that took place in 1970 where the aged Rocky Marciano was pitted against the fresh out of the clink Muhammad Ali, because Muhammad Ali, you see, protested the draft and said that he didn't have any problem with the Viet Cong. Mm-hmm. What he did have a problem with was all these white folks in America that were, you know, booing and hissing at him and, like, treating him like persona non grata. So he's like, I think I'm just going to stay here. And he did. He got stripped of his title temporarily and thrown in jail. And he got out and needed to make a little extra money. He actually, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Let's get to the mastermind behind this fake fight. It was a guy named Murray Warner, who was an ad executive from Miami. Ad executives always have the big ideas, right? They're all about the creative here. So he got really creative and decided that he could use some of this emerging computer technology to initially create fantasy fights in the form of radio plays.
Sounds exciting.
It sounds exciting. It's that theater of the mind, right? Because we know that was the way people consumed sports. That's the reason sports commentary exists. Baseball announcers and all of that, they paint a picture in your mind. Why couldn't you do that and just make it all up or generate the results from computer algorithms from something called an NCR 315 computer that had 5K, yes, 5K kilobytes of core memory, and it was handmade, and it was able to take these stats and create play-by-plays of different sporting events.
So you're telling me that in 1970, there was a technology by which we could use digital production methods to create an audio drama of really compelling storytelling.
Yeah, but the digital part was really just to create the data, right? It was crunching numbers at this point. It was saying, based on these stats, feed it into this machine, it'll generate you a winner, and it'll generate you, like, these different scenarios, right? NCR, by the way, you know what it stands for?
I don't.
National Cash Register, because you may be aware of the NCR company as manufacturers today of ATM machines. But back in these days, they were on the cutting edge of essentially, I guess, home computing. This wouldn't have been attainable to the average person. But I think you found some pretty cool ads from not exactly the 315, but something around the same time. Let's hear what they were promising with these devices.
Consider the outstanding features of the Century 300. First, the hardware. Century 300 is an amalgamation of innovative technology in the most advanced systems architecture. Century 300 is composed of four independently functioning units: the memory, processor, I/O controller, and the operator's communication center.
Yeah, those are the NCR machines, and they do make ATMs. Or ATM machines, as you say, Noel.
It's very redundant.
It's ATMs.
It's like saying a cheese quesadilla.
Yeah, it's not right. It's like saying Muhammad Ali, the greatest boxer. Like, you just know.
You know.
You don't need to say it.
His autobiography is called The Greatest, My Own Story.
Well, you know why.
Yeah.
Because he's the greatest.
He's the greatest. He gets that title. Now, these were not home computers. I mean, we got to remember, this was still back in the day of, like, punch card computing. So what Warner did was he basically reduced some of the greatest boxers in the history of the sport, 16 different fighters, to little cutouts on these punch cards.
Just basically listing out their statistics. This one has X agility, this one has X power.
Almost
speed.
like a little more advanced version of D&D, you know, where you're rolling the however many nerd-sided dice we're talking about here.
Yeah, or on the back of those, you know, since we started talking about comic books earlier on, they were in the 90s, they were really popular, the sort of like baseball cards, but for superheroes, you
exactly.
Say, like, okay, well, Spider-Man can jump this high, but yeah, Superman can leap tall buildings.
That's right.
You know, so
plus or minus different stats, mm-hmm, different character mm-hmm. stats. So very much, I mean, I don't know, if hopefully I'm not oversimplifying this too much, but that was the idea. And
I think
if
you're talking about a computer with 5 kilobytes of memory, oversimplification is.
I think you're right. It's the name of the game here. So with this data, Warner was able to generate 15 matches and have them voiced essentially as though they were real. It makes sense. It's theater of the mind. There's no. There's nothing stopping you. If I had the voice of a radio announcer and I knew how to talk about a baseball game, I could fake a baseball game with you right now.
Did we? I think we just invented a new podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should just pitch this to our bosses,
I
right?
I think that's a great idea.
We just recreate classic sports matchups mm-hmm. of which I am at a loss to name because
exactly.
I am
but
not
it's,
a sports
But it's an
fan.
Alternative history version of these sports matches,
Well,
right?
It's interesting that you mentioned alternative history because Warner also, he saw a much bigger potential for this process.
I'm
it wasn't
so
just
glad
about
said,
sports.
Yes. No, what did he say? There's a quote from him that is mind-bogglingly brazen and just full of hubris, as though he had figured out the most amazing thing in the history of entertainment.
Yeah, Warner had really, really high thoughts. There was a piece from Sports Illustrated where he's quoted as saying, "We could do more than sports. Much more. Wars. Hitler's Germany against the Roman Empire?
Right.
Napoleon versus Alexander the Great? How about election campaigns? George Washington versus Franklin Roosevelt? Abraham Lincoln against George Wallace? And debates? Socrates takes on Karl Marx. Thoreau against Jean-Paul Sartre. Why not? Why not?
Why not, indeed? I'll tell you why not, because this is so reductive, right? Because, like, at least with a thing like boxing, you kind of can match up stats, and that sort of makes sense. But, like, with a debate or, like, a poetry slam or something like that, that all comes down to individual creativity and, like, coming up with the right words that are actually better as opposed to, like, you know, boxing and someone being able to – I'm not saying that, like, sports don't have an art form to themselves, but it's a lot easier to crunch some numbers and say who's going to win in a boxing match than it is a debate or like some kind of philosophical argument. You
well,
know?
It's interesting because I think – and I've heard – you know, we work in a creative industry and I've heard this from a lot of people both in podcasts but also people we know who work in film and radio and television. And, you know, they'll come up with a really creative, compelling idea for a new show, a movie, and they'll pitch it to the studios. And the studios will say – no, we're in the digital age. Everything's internet. We have statistics and analysis for everything. So we'll run the numbers, and this movie will not appeal to the right people in the right amount of time for the right season. And so it won't make money, and it's not worth doing. And I think there's this idea that hanging things on numbers and analysis and that sort of data-driven model is a new thing, and it's a woe of our current age. But go back to the 70s, and we're already doing it.
This is not even the 70s yet. This is like 68, 69
right, yeah,
when
this is
happened.
This is
the
this
turn.
Is even before.
Yeah,
you know.
It's crazy. And you're right. I mean, not to get too off the rail here, but like Netflix, I mean, they live and die by the algorithm, dude. Like they all of that that data that we're feeding Netflix, they use that to choose what kind of thing they're going to make.
I live and die by the Netflix algorithm
I think
night.
We all do. Dude,
usually it's falling asleep on the couch by the Netflix algorithm. But
I don't know how to pick anything on Netflix anymore because it's trying to cater to me so hard that it's literally giving me like nothing that I want to see. I don't know how that makes any sense at all, but like I just scroll through Netflix thumbnails infinitely and never actually pick something and just end up rewatching The Office. That's because mm-hmm. I know it's, you know, but and that's not even going to be on there for very much
tragedy
longer.
Of choice, right?
It is the tragedy of choice, but we digress. So just to get back to the stats and what those factors would have looked like, they had 58 different factors. That's not even that many, considering. But it was things like we're talking about, like speed, you know, probability of injury, how strong a left you can throw, et cetera. And even things like, I love this Guardian article, again, characterizes as the sublime. Hardness of punch, killer instinct, and courage.
I wonder how many people had to contribute to say, like, you know, I think this guy's got a 7 killer instinct. And people say, like, no. That's an 8.
That's much more like
you look
8.
At that instinct.
For sure. It's absolutely killer. So this is a thing that starts happening. And he assigns these 16 fighters, you know, number values. So Rocky Marciano is number 004. And Jack Dempsey, another classic boxer, 002. And in the 13th round of these matches that we're talking about, it has Rocky Marciano knocking out Jack Dempsey.
So Muhammad Ali was also part of this group of fighters that Warner had put together, right?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
And what happened with him?
So he was pitted against a guy named Jim Jeffries, who Ali had openly dismissed. We know Ali was known for his quick wit and trash mouth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this was no exception. He very openly trashed Jeffries as, quote, history's clumsiest, most slow-footed heavyweight. So he was none too pleased when the old NCR 315 said that Ali would have lost in a quarterfinal round to this man he characterized as being a pretty slow, bad boxer because, you know, Ali was known as being super quick on his feet and, you know, the greatest, like we said. So he actually takes it a step further. He's not doing particularly great money-wise because he got stripped of all his stuff and he was in jail and he definitely, like, was not at his peak at this point. So he probably maybe, I mean, I don't know, I'm speculating here, but sought out this as an opportunity to make a little cash and get back on his feet. So he actually sues Warner.
Yeah, I think it, I mean, I obviously cannot put myself in the mind of Muhammad Ali, but, you know, in addition to the cash issue, like this is a man who rightfully so had serious pride.
Yes.
You know, like he was the greatest.
His reputation was everything.
The greatest.
Yes, for sure.
You know, so, and he had just been dinged by the government. You know, he'd been, had all these issues regarding his stance on the war. And then the next thing he knows, this computer is saying that he would lose to Jim Jeffries.
Yeah.
Like, it's an outrage. So I think probably, you know, he approaches Warner with a $1 million lawsuit.
Defamation.
Saying that he was defamed.
Right.
And yeah, that gets to the heart. It's defamation. It's misrepresentation of himself and his character and his abilities.
First of all, not to mention, like, again, a lot of these stats that we're talking about, highly speculative, right? I mean, 58 individual components, these simulations, utter fiction. Wouldn't you agree? I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
and again, it's late 60s. This is very, very primitive computing.
Very primitive. Yeah.
But Warner, not primitive. He's a pretty adept businessman. He's an ad guy.
He knows what's up.
He figures out a way out of this lawsuit. So he says, all right, Muhammad Ali, you're suing me for $1 million.
I love this.
But what about this instead? And that's always the fun part, you know, when you're like, I'm just going to propose an alternate route.
Yeah.
And this alternate route was for Warner to pay Muhammad Ali $9,999, a dollar less than $10,000, to film this fantasy fight. And the thing about this is, what a great opportunity to take this computer radio simulation and put it on film.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of taken into the next level. They hadn't done any of these yet.
Yeah, and he said, Muhammad Ali, how would you like to fight Rocky Marciano? At the time, it's 1970. Muhammad Ali is in his early 30s, which, you know, it's not too old, but as
yeah,
a boxer—
but that's like long in the tooth, right? Yeah.
And Marciano certainly was not ready for fighting. He was 50 years old
at
the time.
That's right. He had made a career as a sausage and Italian food impresario, right? I think he had been out of the game for about 13 years, had not been exercising, had gotten quite paunchy, was balding, did not have a very good back from years of, you know, abuse in the ring, I'm sure. But he had made quite a living as a TV presenter. He had all these product endorsements, had a chain of restaurants, a sausage factory. He had even like tried his hand at being a referee, and he wasn't against doing this. And there's a great story about how in the same Guardian article about how he was a notorious cheapskate. He like would do that trick that I never thought was really real, where you take a wire and attach it to a coin and put it in a payphone and then fish it back out, you know? And he apparently, like, his business manager characterized him as being just like addicted to cash, whereas he would write checks for $50,000 like it was nothing. But if he had 20 bucks in his pocket, he would do everything he could to hold on to that 20 bucks because he grew up in a different era where cash was king.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
Think about Marciano, right? He was born in the early 20s. So he grew up in the height of the Depression, you know, working probably black markets to find things for his family as a kid. And that stays with you when you're that young. But yeah, he really branched out after his boxing career kind of wrapped up. It's really interesting. This has a lot of parallels, both Marciano's story and then kind of what we're going to get into with Rocky Balboa, who is a fake hero, but a hero nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
But we can get back to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shortly. Let's talk about this video because it's really, really creative.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me, I was talking to super producer Casey Pegram, who I did not shout out at the beginning of the show.
I think my presence here ruined things.
It really threw off the vibe.
Too many tangents.
No, we're also in a different studio. I want to be very clear. There are multiple reasons why I forgot to do that. But yes, I was talking to our super producer, Casey Pegram, about how the way this was filmed kind of reminds me of some of those early fighting games like Mortal Kombat, where they actually have actors in costumes playing out all of the different move scenarios, and then they map it to video, or I don't know exactly how they do it. Casey could probably like explain it, but I don't think he's recording his mic.
I'm recording.
Oh, but... sweet. So how do they do that, Casey? Like in Mortal Kombat, where they're shooting profiles of fighters, you know, dressed like Scorpion and Sub-Zero.
Yeah, I think they used to call that motion capture.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, it's literally like point a camera at a surface that is like a green screen or a black screen or whatever. And just, yeah, do all the moves. And then that turns into like a limited number of frames because they didn't have enough memory in early video games to like ingest all that stuff.
Casey on the case.
And similar to that, I mean, you've also got video games like Dragon's Lair, which was sort of a
choose your own adventure.
Exactly. And I think this Rocky Marciano, Muhammad Ali fight is sort of a halfway in between those two.
Because, yes.
So what Warner does is he gets Marciano and Ali into the studio, which is a boxing ring,
yeah,
and films them going through all the different possible punches, dodges, ducks that you could come across in a boxing match.
And then match it up to the audio track that was generated from the stats that the computer made for that matchup or whatever, based on both men, I believe, in their prime, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is the sort of thing where they shot this on film. The boxing ring was set against a totally black background, so there are not too many details that would distract. So you could really cut from one punch to the other to make it look as relatively seamless as you can. I mean, you can see it now.
Yeah, and, it's all over the internet.
Yeah, we'll share a link to this on the Ridiculous Historians Facebook page. So if you're not part of that group, head on over that way and check out this fight. It looks a little rudimentary to us now, but at the time, it was somewhat groundbreaking.
It absolutely was. I mean, you can see the cuts. The continuity isn't great, but like you said, because of the fact that they made the background so simple, it isn't as distracting as one might think. And they're literally recreating with these series of kind of pre-planned scenarios of them going through the motions of what would happen, what could happen in a fight. They recreate that algorithmically, I guess, for lack of a better term, generated fight.
Yeah, and Noel, you've talked a lot about theater of the mind, but I mean, this was just actual theater, just pure theatrics on film. They wanted to make themselves look good. Muhammad Ali, who had at the time had took on a little bit of a paunch, he lost about 45 pounds getting ready for this. But at the same time, he was still a little flabby. Rocky Marciano, on the other hand, you know, he's pushing 50 years old. He had on a toupee to try to recapture that younger look, but it wasn't quite real.
No, it wasn't. But again, it was you got to give him an A for effort because it really – I mean, I'm not a huge boxing guy. I know I'm not any kind of boxing guy, so I don't even know what these dudes really looked like in their prime. And I was looking at them like, they didn't look like two over-the-hill has-beens to me. It looked like two pretty strong dudes that were, you know, cut out to be matched up against each other.
So we've got this filmic event, and it was actually shown in movie theaters.
And apparently, some of the edits or the segments that they created, because I would imagine too, they knew in advance what the outcome was going to be. They knew in advance what the play by plays were going to be. They must have done some work of actually recreating some of those things, you know, to match with what was in the audio. And apparently some of them, they did such a good job that they don't even have any edits. So there's no cuts. They go along perfectly with the commentary.
It looks great. So January 20th, 1970 is when the super fight aired in cinemas. There were 1,000 cinemas in the U.S. and 500 more across the world, Canada, Europe, Mexico, a couple other places. And people could go sit in the theater and really just witness to what at that point had just been pure fantasy, pure speculation. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like what we get into now with all these superhero crossover movies, where in the new Avengers movies, you get to see characters from Black Panther show up against the folks from Thor and Iron Man, and just this sort of mishmash of fan service.
And I want to point out, too, I made a mistake. They didn't know the outcome. They didn't know the outcome until it was on live. So that's why they filmed it in such a way they could piece together those scenarios. So the men were not told who was going to be the
winner. Oh, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was up to the computer.
It was up to the computer to figure it out, and they had to just, like, you know, get as much source material as they could so they could edit it together. And what was the verdict?
Well, what happened is on January 20th, 1970, in front of crowds of thousands of people in movie theaters, Rocky Marciano KOs Muhammad Ali. Round 13, so Ali puts up a good fight, but according to the statistics, according to the computer, it's Marciano in the 13th.
Yeah, and, you know, Ali, he got himself into this because he felt like he was being defamed from all of this. So this is kind of almost a tragic outcome for him in terms of a blow to his ego, right? That he lost yet again. The computer, you know, saw him being defeated again. And he was actually quoted as saying, that computer must have come from Alabama, you know, implying it choosing the white man as the winner.
Well, I think the thing about Ali is there's so many sides to this really compelling man. You know, he had his public bluster and he had to put up his front. But the truth of the matter is, you know, as much as he said that, oh, this whole thing was a hoax, it was a sham, I never would have lost, blah, 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 kind of keeping that facade up, he and Marciano had actually become good friends during the creation of this thing. Like, they were buddies, you know. They, I think, had that mutual professional respect and then hit it off while making this thing and had a blast. You know, one of the ways Muhammad Ali, though, was able to keep up this bluster and say, oh, I should have won and the computer did me wrong, is Marciano wasn't able to say the same thing, because Marciano actually died about 4 or 5 months before this fight aired in theaters. Marciano died August 31st, 1969, which is the day before his birthday, actually. He would have been in his 40s. And he was a passenger on a small plane, and somewhere in Iowa, bad weather just sent the plane down. So he passed away. Never got to see his victory over Ali, which is kind of a shame, even though it wasn't a real victory. Still might have, you know, instilled a little bit of pride in this guy past his prime.
Well, again, this NCR 315 that was being lauded by, or Warner had so much faith in, people in the public is a big part of this. When I say people, began losing faith in this computer because, you know, it's easy to get fascinated by the new thing, the hottest new tech or whatever. Even back in those days, this seemed like magic as far as people were concerned. But it started making some pretty bunk calls, right? So Ali was pretty outspoken, as he was wont to be, and he referred to the outcome of the super fight, you may have said this earlier, Christopher, as a sham and a Hollywood fake. He said all this on the Dick Cavett Show, and Warner was not happy about that because he'd paid Ali the money he was due, and so Warner sued Ali for $2 million, claiming that another one of these fights fell through because Ali was out there spewing all this hatred and lies, and, you know, how dare you defame my dear sweet NCR 315, and this one would have been between Sugar Ray Robinson and Marcel Cerdain, Casey?
Marcel Cerdain.
Casey on the case. Yeah, because Sugar Ray wasn't feeling it. And because, you know, I mean, obviously everyone in the boxing community would have had massive, massive respect for Ali and would have, you know, taken heed if he was talking trash. And soon, everyone kind of lost faith in the machine. In September of 1970, the NCR 315, this is the next model, predicted that Joe Frazier would lose to Bob Foster in a real fight. And no one else was feeling that because Frazier was outweighed Foster by 21 pounds, and he was, like, totally in his prime. It was a weird, wonky kind of matchup, and it was just a total, you know, ship show, as we like to say here on Ridiculous History.
That's the thing about sports that's so exciting, right, is it's not just a numbers game. If you could predict the outcome of any matchup by just looking at the statistics beforehand, that would remove any magic from the scenario.
Yeah.
Right? That's not why you watch a game. You watch a game because you're rooting for one of the teams, but it's those come-from-behind underdog victories, the unexpected wins, that make sports so exciting. And I think Warner, you know, in all of his machinations and his imaginings of using data to really drive this, he forgot the human element. And that pride is sort of also what Ali carried with himself for so long. You know, you mentioned his autobiography before. One of the things he wrote was about this fight. He said, I saw myself on the ropes being destroyed by Marciano in one of the, quote, artistic endings few actors could equal. But some people thought it was real. Some sat stone still. Some booed and yelled. Some cried. I felt like I had disappointed millions all over the world. It left me ashamed of what I'd been doing. I'd gone over the country promoting the series as fair and accurate, especially the Marciano v. Ali show.
Man, that's heavy.
That also could be him, you know, trying to paint the picture of his situation so that his lawsuit had no legs.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. But, well, I will say, back to Warner, his sort of blindness to the thing, the magic, the spark that actually makes these events special is so apparent in that quote that we read earlier about how let's like, you know, pit Nietzsche versus Schopenhauer, whoever, like all of these like human, you know, fallible individuals making cases, you know, for their philosophies, like from the heart. Like you can't assign a numeric value to that or a loss or a win. And the fact that he thought that showed that he was definitely high on his own supply in terms of thinking that this was like much more of a clever idea than it actually was.
But, you know, this the super fight for as sort of strange and tangential and not really, you know, it wasn't the future of sports at the time. But you still see this today in like football matchups. Anytime you're watching a game, the two announcers need something to talk about because football is super boring and takes so long. Side note. That they just end up talking about stats of this player versus that player, of this quarterback versus that quarterback, of what they're expected to do versus what they actually do. And I feel like that's half of sports commentary is just talking about the data, and it bores me to tears.
Totally. And again, we're in fantasy football season, or about to be. We've got a couple of new fantasy football shows launching here on the network. That is not a world that I am familiar with, but at least that does rely on chance, and it does rely on kind of the ability to, like, pick winners. Because you can interpret the stats and then kind of roll the dice and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, those are podcasts I would listen to.
Yeah, because the stats are fallible. I mean, that's the point. There is that human element and that ability to kind of rise above, you know, what the numbers say and kind of give that final push into greatness or whatever. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, so if you're listening and you're interested in this fight, you can seek it out. You can find a lot of it online. But there was also in 2005 a DVD of the fight came out. And it also included a documentary about the radio fights and the history behind this. It's pretty interesting. But the legacy lived on in strange ways. I mentioned this earlier in the 2003 film Rocky Balboa, which I don't know. Noel, are you a Rocky fan? How do you feel about Rocky?
I think it's a classically good film. And I think even like the newer ones from recent years are pretty great.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the one I'm talking about. Rocky is, I think, one of the finest American films of all time. And everyone should see it. And everyone should see it many, many times. And I cry anytime I watch it. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. But Rocky Balboa, which came out in the 2000s, was the sixth film in that series, and it sort of bookended the career of this boxer, semi-fictionalized boxer that Sylvester Stallone created. So it's set 30 years after the initial fights in Rocky, and Rocky is working in a meat plant. You know, he has his own kind of side gig. It kind of mirrors what Rocky Marciano was going through at the time. So in this 2006 film, Rocky Balboa, the impetus for Rocky coming back into the ring for the Stallion trying to reclaim his title, mixing some nicknames there, is ESPN pits this aging boxer in his prime against Mason the Line Dixon, a boxer who was unpopular, you know, according to the film, but, you know, claimed that he could have beaten Rocky Balboa. And so the super fight actually inspired the 2006 film, Rocky Balboa, in sort of this really weird metatextual way in which Rocky kind of relates to Rocky Marciano. There's obviously parallels in the names and in the story about them packing meat and kind of working in that industry on the side, which I will also say Weird Al Yankovic presaged in his terrific album in 3D from the 80s.
You know what I recently rewatched that totally held up? UHF.
I have dreams of having a chat one day with our colleague Chuck Bryant on Movie Crush about that show.
Oh, great! You totally should. You don't. That we can make that dream a reality, dude. I'm on that show. We got to do that.
Would say for UHF is probably the film I've seen more times than any other, except maybe Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right on. That explains so much about your personality, Christopher. And speaking of your personality, thank you so much for lending it to us on this episode. This was a lot of fun.
It is always available for you.
I appreciate it. We love filling that Christopher Haciota-shaped hole in the studio. Big thanks to super producer Casey Pegram, as always. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme. Thanks to Ben Bolin, co-host in absentia, away on adventures. Can't wait to have you back, buddy, so we can hear about your exploits and whether or not you made it out of Japan without getting kicked out against your will. Big thanks to our research associates, Gabe Luzier and Ryan Barish. And thanks to you folks out there in podcast land. We'll see you next time.
Noel, I think this episode was a knockout.
I think so too. Boom. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.